I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to Kerry Garrison and David Esquire on the world-famous Camera Dojo.
Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of CameraDojo.com, where we help you make the most out of your photography. This is your host, Kerry Garrison, and with me, not at my side, but in another city, my good buddy, Mr. David Esquire. David, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing pretty good. I'm, here with you, helping people get their black belt in photography.
Hoya!
Hoya! Dojo! Now we need like a Candace Cunningham soundbite for that. We're, you know, and have like a little video clip of her going, Dojo!
I'm hoping to put her in the Camera Dojo costume at WPPI.
Oh, you know it. And have her walking around going, Dojo! Wearing her slingers. Yes!
That's right. So not a whole lot in the news lately. So we've been just trying to crank out a couple articles here and there. And I've done a handful of video ones because people have asked for video ones. So I decided to take up the challenge and knock out a couple things. And so we did a video on how to use a light meter. I know I just did an article on how to use a light meter, but I got a bunch of questions like, okay, I understand why, and I understand kind of more of the concept, but how do you really use one? So I did a video on how I actually used one. So I think a lot of people thought, oh, well, hey, now that just, that nailed it for me. So I understand it now. So there you go. We have a video on how a step-by-step of how I actually use a light meter in a product shoot.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead.
I was just going to chime in, but not only did you do the video tip, but then this past weekend, unfortunately I couldn't be there. I was shooting up in Santa Monica after a near 2.5 hour road trip getting there. But you did the workshop, the Camera Dojo workshop at the Camera Dojo HQ about lighting and setups, and you were using the light meter then as well. So you had some real world hands-on examples going on with people that shown up.
That's true. We had 15 people show up at my house. I mean, it was the first workshop that I've just, you know, officially put on. And so I wanted to have a smaller group because it was going to be hands-on working with lights and working with the light meter and things like that. So I didn't want it to be too big. So we had 15 people come over, and we had a couple models, and we got a bunch of great shots, and people were learning how to do portrait photography using constant lights. It was just a blast, and there's some people who have already started posting some of the images in the Camera Dojo forums, and I just got some emails tonight, you know, thanking me for the event and that they're all processing their images tonight. So over the next couple of days, we should see more of some of the stuff that people did. I'm really excited to see some of the work they got out of it. It was just a lot of fun. The models had a good time. You know, anytime you got 15 photographers shooting you, and it's kind of like paparazzi going off, it's pretty interesting and a lot of fun. So I really appreciated all the people who came and enjoyed it. And it was my pleasure to put it on.
I was there in spirit. I was wishing I was there instead of sucking down car exhaust fumes that afternoon.
Yeah, well, it was a blast. And we're going to start organizing some more regular meetups and different types of workshops, mini workshops, big workshops, all kinds of things. So look for those things to be announced here shortly, hopefully.
Maybe on Twitter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Then Adam Mason wrote in and said, how does aperture affect your shot? He was understanding how the aperture affects the amount of light that comes in, but he was kind of struggling with how you actually can change the effect of your shot with changing the aperture. So again, knocked out a video and showed how it actually affects your shot and how to use it, and did a little couple examples. There's like 4 or 5 examples in that video, and answered his question. So there you go, Adam. Thank you for writing us and letting us know. If you have questions that you want answered in this way, we have a new email address for that. It's, get ready for this, questions@cameradojo.com.
Gosh, that's so weak.
Try not. Well, I was thinking like Ask Dojo or Black Belt or, you know, and I was like, I'm like talking to my wife. I'm like, Karen, what do you think this email should be? She's like, well, what's it for? I'm like, so people can ask questions. And she's like, questions? I'm like, oh.
She probably gave you the dumbest look with that one too. Like, you're a dork.
She's like, well, how about Ask Carrie? And I'm like, well, Dane's got Ask Dane. I don't want to, you know, copy that exactly. She's like,
yeah,
you know, Ask OG. Well, no one knows who OG.
That's secret.
So
I can't get that up yet.
No one would spell it right. Would be my problem. You know, OG. So questions at cameradojo.com. If you have things for the podcast, you can always send an email to podcast@cameradojo.com or questions@cameradojo.com. And we'll try and answer your questions on the air, in a video, in an article. So if you're having any photography related question, ask us. And we'll, if we can't answer it, we'll find someone who can. There's a promise. How's that? From someone else. So
that's true. I've actually, you know, hearing a lot of the questions and being able to chat with a lot of the listeners, it's been really neat because it's inspired me to come up with some new things as well. Kind of like, I could try this maybe.
Well, we're always up for challenges too.
Definitely.
So we do not have challenges at cameradojo.com. So don't send
me
another.
Sounds like a new email address.
No. Let's keep it at questions. If you have any photography related question, send it to us and we'll try and answer it ourselves. And if we can't answer it, we'll find someone who can. And if we can do a video or article about it, even better, because we'd like stuff that is people are having problems with things or they don't understand something or they want clarification on something. We'd love to help you out. So questions@cameradojo.com. Let's get into our conversation with our guest. And
yes.
He's been on the show before and many of you know him. He's been to seminars. We've talked to him about him many, many times. We've given away copies of his book, et cetera, et cetera. And today, Dane Sanders is with us to talk about being efficient, managing your time, managing your tasks, and being more productive in that way. And we talk about a lot of different things that can help you, a lot of tools that can help you, some books that can help you, some software that can help you. And I think this is going to be a good one for people. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be on with Dane Sanders. Today, we've got a special guest who has been with us once before, Mr. Dane Sanders. And Dane is best known for his book, Fast Track Photographer, which a lot of us have used to kind of define ourselves and figure out where we kind of belong in this giant world of photography. But today we got another topic we're going to talk about that Dane's been helping people with lately, and that's time management and how to be productive and how to do it efficiently. Would that be the best way to put it, Dane?
Well, first off, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate coming back. I think if I'm back a second time, that makes me not so special anymore. So I'm glad that you guys were kind enough to invite me. And it's a good question, Kerry, because I don't know that I would call it time management, because I don't know that time is manageable. It just kind of happens. I do think it has a lot to do with productivity, though, and actually when I commit to getting something accomplished or done or completed, I need mechanisms to help me do that because life is so interrupted all the time, at least in my world. And I sense that most people that I get in conversations with about these things, they have great intentions with how they're going to get tasks accomplished, but it just keeps getting interrupted, and they try to, spin plates or whatever metaphor you want to pick. But in my efforts to kind of keep a whole bunch of things going at once, I found that I really needed some help because I was feeling like my life was having me more than I was having it. And I needed some help, and I stumbled into a system a couple of years back now, actually quite a few years ago now, that I know that there's a kind of a massive cult following around it, around the world, and it's David Allen's Getting Things Done system. And really, the brilliance of David Allen isn't that he invented these ideas. I think he was just the first one to really systematize and name them, and that's why he gets all the credit. But there's a number of folks who apply these ideas and do them very well, and it's really revolutionized the way that we manage things.
Because one of the problems with most people is they try and take this big to-do list and shoehorn it into a calendar or some other mechanism that doesn't really work for that. It's not designed for that. And what we've ended up with is most people work off, you know, what's called a guilt-based system. You feel guilty because something is getting older and older instead of the fact that if it is getting older, it probably doesn't have the importance of something that's new. And so a lot of these things like David Allen talks about and Michael Lindberger is how to change that to be success driven.
Oh, interesting. I haven't quite heard it framed that way, but that makes a lot of sense. I know that the my understanding is that the evolution of time management as an idea, or day timers, or task management, it all began for a lot of people. Really, it began with Peter Drucker when he started talking about management mid-century. But in the like early 80s, guys like Stephen Covey and other people like him began to frame out the idea of managing our time. And he started talking about, you know, establishing or identifying what roles you have in your life and tagging goals to those roles and then creating priority lists of A, B, and C, or 1, 2, 3 of what needs to get done. And I think what you're describing, if I'm hearing you right, Kerry, is that that system started to become, whether you put those things in your calendar or you just had your list, that system ceased to work in an environment where we're constantly being interrupted and new tasks and responsibilities are coming our way because of the internet, because of email and voicemail and different vehicles of getting, like, interrupting our lives. And a lot of people employ different strategies. It's an interesting way to call it, like, a guilt mode. That feels a little harsh to me because I think there's a lot of folks that it's not that they want to be led by guilt. It's just they're overwhelmed and they can't get things done. And I think that when David Allen and others showed up and said, look, let's rethink these things and create systems that is more that are just kind of better tools for our age. That's when I think things began to make a lot more sense.
Wow, I feel like I'm the case study here between the two of you. Carrie's like,
what do you mean?
Guilt-based.
Well, I mean, it's something that this is a topic that I'm near and dear to my heart because I am so busy and I get pulled in so many different directions. And when you actually have, you know, 100 plus emails that you have to deal with on a daily basis, if you don't have a good management strategy, you just get overwhelmed, and you end up never getting tasks done.
Or at least you do, Kerry. I'm not sure if everyone in the whole world does, but I hear you.
Oh, I know where you went with that.
Well, why don't you help him out?
I don't remember the term, Kerry. What he's referring to is instead of when we use a subject and we basically incorporate into the universe of that subject everybody that would be involved, like me, you, and Dane, and everybody else, and we'd say, well, you know, we would like to use this. It's like, no, let's turn it around and say I.
Well, and I would like someone else to do my tasks for me, but since I can't have that, and I can talk about some of the books and stuff that I've been studying, but you've been really talking about this in some of your seminars lately, right?
I have, by the way, that was a little bit mean on my part. But the reason I wanted to interrupt that a little bit is because there are some folks who have different systems. Like, I love my friend David Jay. He has a system for dealing with like emails, for instance, and he just doesn't answer them, or he just deletes them once he's read them, and he doesn't feel like he needs to be dragged around like the tyranny of the urgent. And I think that's a reasonable system. There's trade-offs when you make those kinds of choices, but I think what matters is that we find a system that is going to handle what we do. And in my workshops, what I do like to talk specifically about giving people a basic framework of how getting things done as a system is different than what a lot of people are used to. And in really quick order, and I think, David, you're a great example of this, people get their mind around it really quickly and they go, okay, this really could make sense for me. And they get the right tools to employ the system. And within about a day or so, it can revolutionize everything, how you view all of these tasks that are coming in. In fact, I actually enjoyed productivity in a whole new light because I just got given the tool on how to deal with this kind of onslaught of responsibilities. And as I've heard you, David, I'd love to hear some of your own kind of experiences with it, how you would articulate it, but it's pretty profound. Wouldn't you agree?
I 100% agree with you, Dane. After the program down in San Diego, you know, it's like I had mentioned, I just wanted to take 30 days and redo everything under the hood for the business. But in a real world, that's just not possible. So I'm taking on
right.
little bits and pieces. And one of the things that I wanted to do is I weighed the two different pieces of software, Things and then OmniFocus. And you had made the leap to Things, merging everything over, from OmniFocus, which are both productivity
right.
software programs for your daily tasks. And
yeah.
I fell in love with Things, but for me, I found it to be slightly limiting because it's only synchronizable with my iPhone via Wi-Fi here in my home office, whereas OmniFocus is totally doable over MobileMe. So you could be pretty much anywhere in the world and get your updates or update your home office. The changes...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the changes that have happened making the decision to go this route, I don't remember the last time. I mean, it's been... this many years that, like, I love the term Carrie used, using a shoehorn to get as much into your calendar as possible, because that's kind of what my calendar looked like. But I don't remember the last time that I felt so, I don't want to say at peace, but not so stressed out and so horrible about my productivity of the day, knowing that, oh my gosh, I had all these things on my calendar that didn't get done, that got moved, where when I got done sorting and organizing all the stuff that was on my calendar for the next year, that it turned out that I had nearly 100 items on there that were just stuff that needed to be done someday, not right now,
right, maybe,
but someday.
Right.
Yeah. And then the stuff that really had to be done, I was able to map out over the course of the next couple of weeks. And I mean, I even told that to Carrie yesterday. I'm like, look, I'm on a mission. I'm taking care of my things. I'm getting things done. And it just felt so good. It really
yeah.
clears your head a lot. I was really impressed, and that's why I really felt strongly about having the three of us talk about this tonight, because there are so
yeah.
many other people that are out there struggling with this right now.
Right, and I think, let's get clear on a couple things that I think might help people wrap their minds around what this is all about. And what I love what you're painting as a picture, David, is the result. Like the sought outcome is that we don't feel as overwhelmed as we normally do, and that we... or at least a thought outcome is that I don't feel like my life is wagging me, that I'm wagging my life. And the trick, according to David Allen, is to begin to understand the nature of what a lot of people call multitasking. When they say they're multitasking, what they really mean is that they're thinking in their minds of multiple things over and over and over again. They're not necessarily accomplishing anything. What they're doing is, or at least what I'm doing, it's kind of like having multiple applications open on my computer at the same time. I have 17 applications open. Well, what's the net effect on my computer? Well, obviously everything slows down dramatically. And it's because my computer has to, over and over and over again, consider what it's going to take to keep all these things running over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And what the brilliance of Allen's system is, it allows me as an end user to have kind of nets, or he calls them inbox spaces, where that I can collect all of my responsibilities and locate them there, trusting that I'll be able to deal with them later.
Right.
And by creating these inboxes, and some of them are built in, like our email inbox or our voicemail inbox, but even physical inboxes in our home, by just having them, knowing that they're in a space that will get dealt with at appropriate times, all of a sudden it has this kind of net effect of peace, because he calls a mind like water. It's the ability to kind of sit still and just trust that when I need to deal with the things that I'm responsible for, I will. And then there's a lot more we're going to talk about in a second about that, but I think that's probably the most potent piece, if I'm hearing you right, David, that most people get right out of the gate like that. That sounds like a fantasy to most people, but when you start experiencing it, it's pretty powerful.
It's been profound. Catherine's noticed
yeah.
a difference, even, where she's like, oh my gosh, you don't seem so fried at the end of the day. I mean, I'm tired because it's been a busy day and it's that time of the year, but not how it was 21 days ago. you know, where Carrie would get on me and we would talk about this, and he would really do his best to, you know, express to me, you know, hey, you really need to get your calendar under control. I'm like, I didn't know of these other tools, and this is the best tool that I've had because it separates my calendar from my tasks, and the tasks are so easy to map out. You set it up. There's only so many hours in the day you have, and you make sure you've got enough you can bite off, and boom. I mean, oh my gosh, it's been phenomenal. And now I don't look at my calendar and go, oh gosh, here we go.
Yeah, it's powerful. Would it be helpful to share a little bit of how the system works?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a couple things, and this is just review. And first off, just let me recommend if you're listening and you want to get some kind of more detailed help on this, and you know, one option is come to our workshop because we can cover it in depth, and I'd love to have you come. But if that's not available to you, there's a book by this guy named David Allen called Getting Things Done. That's really worth looking up. He also has other books. One of them is called Ready for Anything, which is a little bit more bite-sized chunks of these ideas. And I also probably need to say that even though you can learn this whole system in about a day, what's amazing is over time, it deepens dramatically. At least it was, that's so for me. So much so that I feel like, you know, I've been in this now for, feels like about 4 or 5 years. Every once in a while, I feel like I'm learning it at a whole different level. So as you get into it, just know this is kind of a new habit that you're taking on, but this is how the basic premise works.
Before we get off this, we're talking about a couple books, and I'll just toss in this one. One of mine that I'm using right now is Michael Linenberger, Total Workday Control Using Microsoft Outlook. And it's the same, it's all based on getting things done, but it also helps you organize your Outlook tasks and to-do lists based on the concepts that we're going to talk about.
Do you guys have any listeners that use Microsoft Outlook?
I do.
Yes. Well, yeah, you do, Carrie. There's actually quite a few people, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I'm just trying to be cool.
I do very miss it, though. I miss Outlook. I miss the whole seamlessness of that particular program when I was on a PC. It was a good program.
Why not use Entourage?
When I first switched over to the iPhone, there was a lot of problems with it. So I was just like, I'll go ahead and go with iCal and email and blah, blah, blah. Not a total fan of it, but now that the iPhone syncs better with Entourage, I've got everything all dumped into everything else. It's like, I don't want to go through that whole export-import process. That was...
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. I think the iCal mail solution is much better than Outlook or Entourage. But good for you, man, to reach out, Carrie. I think it's great to help the less fortunate that have to live in the Outlook world a problem.
Thank you.
Very compassionate of you. Okay, so I'm a little it's really late, and I'm driving, and I'm tired, so forgive me if I'm just being a jerk. I'm trying to be
funny. We deal with Carrie all the time. Don't worry about it.
I'm really trying to be funny, and it's just not coming out funny, so I apologize. Okay, so...
No, that was good.
One of the reasons why I'm really glad you referenced that, though, Carrie, is because I think it's tempting to think that the system is about the tools. The system and the tools are very, very different things. I mean, whether you use Outlook as a tool, or you use Things as a tool, or you use OmniFocus as a tool, or pen and paper as a tool, because a lot of people have low-tech solutions on how to employ this system. Don't make the mistake of if you just go buy the software, it's going to work. It's not.
Daytimer hasn't gone out of business, have they?
What's that?
Daytimer hasn't gone out of business, have they?
They haven't. And I think, just a pencil and a piece of paper can be plenty. But I think that the bottom line is that you have a system that actually works for you. And if you're noticing that you say you're going to have roles and goals and priority list 1, 2, 3, but you never get to the threes or the twos, and really you don't even get to the ones because you end up just dealing with the new things that come your way, that probably means your system doesn't work, and it's probably worth throwing out and trying a new one. And in my experience, I've yet to see a system that's more powerful than the Getting Things Done system for productivity. So let me explain how it works. David Allen suggests that most people plan using with a kind of project mindset. So if I'm going to do work around the house, I'll I'll have a project called Work Around the House. And if I have another project called my new website, then I'll be working on my new website. And if I have another project called Refine My Workflow for Post-Production, that's another project. And if I have another project, which is personal grooming, then that's another project. And in all these projects, I come up with tasks or action items that I have to accomplish, like go get a haircut for personal grooming or go buy show at sites for my new website or whatever it is. And in all of those projects, those tasks get accomplished in what David Allen calls contexts or places, another way to think of the same thing. So in one project, I might think of an email that I need to write to somebody. And in that same project, I might think of a phone call I need to make. And in that same project, I might think of an errand I need to run. So calls, emails, and errands are the contexts. And I think about those as I'm making plans within my project. Now, that kind of system everyone understands, and we all kind of employ that idea. If we're going to plan a party, the party is the project, and then we have tasks that we need to do within the project. Where it gets really interesting, though, is if we are clear that every task we write down is actionable, like there's something that we could actually accomplish, meaning if it was done, we'd know it was completed. Once that's an actionable item and we name where we're going to do it, then all of a sudden we can cross-reference our lists so that when we're doing tasks, we can be accomplishing those tasks across multiple projects at the same time. And the example I'd love to give where people really get their mind around this is how many people have gone to Home Depot more than once on a Saturday? And a lot of people have. You know, they go and they come home and they're like, oh, crap, I went there for a lawnmower and I forgot that I needed a light bulb. And and it's because they were thinking in two different projects at the same time. But what Allen's system allows for is by comprehensively taking all of our actions and building our lists first before we do anything. What that allows us to do is when we actually go to productivity mode, accomplishing those tasks, we can cross-reference the list. And when we have to do our calls, we filter for all of our calls that we need to do. And I could be making phone calls across multiple projects. Or if I want to do emails, I could say I'm going to give myself 30 minutes to do emails. And I can do that across multiple projects. Or if I want to do errands, same thing. Well, right now, at least for me, I like to, when I'm traveling, on long drives, I like to pound through a lot of phone calls across multiple projects. And it's a very, very powerful system. Now, the last thing I want to reference, and then we can get into some dialogue about it to clarify some things, is that when we're actually going through the process of taking responsibility for the things we say we're going to commit to do it, what Allen suggests is that what we do is we create these inboxes, these kind of containers to like, for instance, let's say on the drive home, I have a brainstorm that I need to look up a new URL I want to buy at GoDaddy. So that's a task that I would put in my inbox, and I don't know exactly what I'm going to do with it. I'll just put look up URL or something like that. That goes in my inbox or to-do list, and you can do that with things, is one software, or you can do that with what's that PC program again you guys use? Outlook?
That'd be the one.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You can put it there, or you can put it in OmniFocus, or the whole host of different solutions. You can just write it out a piece of paper. But don't think that that's now ready to go. All that means is it's gone into the inbox. And by putting out enough inboxes in your life, you're going to collect, if you do this effectively, you're going to collect all of the things that you have to process later. And he's really wise to say that there's really a two-step thing that goes on. We collect all the things we're responsible for, and then we process those things before we give ourselves permission to go out and do them all. There's actually a quote in his book that says, don't just do something, stand there. And I love that quote because I think a lot of folks rush to action prematurely, and they end up missing opportunities to really thoughtfully and efficiently get a lot more done in a shorter amount of time. So once all these tasks are put in your inbox, then once or twice a day, you batch process your inbox. The photographers understand batch processing. We deal with images all the time. But if we can go ahead and do that with everything in our lives, like taking all those tasks, like go to the URL, I can actually make an action item, like go to URL before the end of today, and or go to GoDaddy before the end of the day and purchase a URL for 2 years at online. So then I know when I'm doing all of my online tasks and I filter for it, that's one of the tasks that will just get accomplished. And I can almost do it with my mind turned off because I know exactly what the task is and I know exactly where I'm supposed to do it. Now, that's a lot I'm throwing out there, guys, and I'm curious if you're listening to it, and you guys are both familiar with it, but some of your listeners aren't. What are some areas that we could clarify that would be helpful for people to really wrap their minds around this idea?
I think one of the things that people struggle with is how to prioritize the different projects and tasks within those projects. And that's where I see a lot of people just take this big list of things and try and just, well, I'm just going to throw everything on my calendar, and then whatever I don't get to today, I'll just drag over till tomorrow, and they just keep doing that over and over and over again, versus coming up with the things that, here's my things that have to get done before I go to bed today. Here's the things that I want to get done the next 72 hours versus the next 2 weeks, or if I ever get around to them.
Yeah, it's a really great point, Kirk. It's funny, after using it for a number of years, I was kind of getting caught in that same scenario where it felt good to put a due date on things because I felt like maybe I would be more likely to get something done. But it turned out, I just, like you're saying, I would just begin to feel badly about not accomplishing it. And even to your point, David, about putting like a specific hour on when things are done, my friend Kevin Swan, who's also very, very gifted in this whole idea of getting things done and productivity, he suggests, and I've employed this idea, and it really is helpful, that I don't put anything in my calendar, like zero, unless I'm willing to say when that time comes and goes and the task hasn't been accomplished by that time, I will never be allowed to go back and do it again. and by putting it in that kind of a frame, I realize that, wow, there's a lot of things that I put time frames on that are really not really true. Like they're just kind of artificial. I don't really have to get something done by a certain time. But an example where that's not true would be I'm doing a workshop in Portland on Monday, and I have one of the tasks that I have to accomplish is I have to order from Kinko's all the printing for the workbooks for everybody. Well, I can put that on my calendar because Monday happens and I haven't done it yet. I'm not going to ever do it because the workshop's going to be going. It's going to be done. So that would be reasonable to put on my calendar, like with a due date. But anything else that isn't going to like come or go, then it's probably best to leave without a due date on it and just frame it around the context that you're going to do it in. That way you're not going to falsely create priorities around things that maybe are just easy for you to do and therefore avoid the things that are hard to do but ultimately have probably greater importance than the easy things. A classic example for me in this is it's really easy for me to deal with emails, but it's really hard to take on projects like write a book. And writing a book is way more important than answering emails. So it's useful for me to not set deadlines on either thing, but just whatever pops up next on my list when I'm in the actual accomplishing mode, that's the thing I have to do next. And if I'm not willing to take that task on, then my whole system gets undermined. And if that happens, then the system's broke.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, because I know when I was kind of transitioning last year that everything fit in a calendar. It wasn't a big deal, you know.
Yeah.
Now it's like not especially this time of year. No, no.
That was my whole beef at the beginning of this conversation is to call it time management is just false because we can't manage time. Time's going to happen whether we like it or not. But we can manage our actions in the context of time. So to frame out what we're going to do around what we're going to accomplish with measurable specific goals and very located in particular contexts, then we have a whole new conversation because time's happening whether we like it or not, and we're going to die with tasks not completed.
No.
it's just going to happen. So like when Michael Jackson and Farrah Fawcett died yesterday, there was stuff on their to-do list that isn't going to get done today. And that's okay because we aren't what we do anyway, so who cares? But the things that we want to get accomplished I think, is live our lives right now in the present and not be overwhelmed by managing tasks in our head. What we want to do is be present. And for me to do that means that I need to make sure that my tasks are being, my responsibilities are getting caught in the right inboxes, that I have the habit of dealing with those things by processing them. And then when I actually commit to accomplishing those tasks, I know what I'm supposed to do, and I know where to do them, and I have a system that's going to allow me to do it very productively. Now, my Achilles heel is, you know, right now, like you can't carry, is I get emails constantly, and some of them, I feel a sense of pressure that I need to respond to them right away, and I suspect there's a lot of listeners that are in a similar place, and this is where I really took a lesson from David Jay when he said, you know, things feel a lot more important than they really are. He had 1,000 emails in his inbox that were all flagged to, that were urgent, that needed response. So these weren't just like the spams and the crappy emails that you don't need to deal with. These were, I'd already been filtered, and these were urgent, like money on the table kind of emails. And he just made the decision because he knew that he would never be able to get through all these 1,000 emails. He selected them all, and he deleted them. Just gone. And what was amazing to me was that for a lot of people, they hear that idea. He even suggests to you, like, if you're overwhelmed by your email, just declare email bankruptcy and delete them all. And there are consequences for that.
But
they're not nearly as grave as I think we give credit. The world doesn't come to an end. The things that are most important, someone will find you. And even if they're a little grumpy with you, they'll probably forgive you if you just tell them what happened. And if you really want to, you can select all and reply all and just say, you know, if it's really important, will you email me again? Because I have to start fresh. And what's amazing is I guarantee you, if you had 1,000 emails that you thought are most critical and you deleted them all, but before you did, you said, hey, if this is really important, email me back, you won't get 1,000 emails back. You might get 100.
Right.
And that tells you that probably 90% of them weren't as important as you thought they were. So
and
my
it's so
temptation,
true.
My temptation is trying to respond to these emails all the time. The smarter thing to do is for me to let the emails batch, like build up, and then deal with all of them in one fell swoop, and say I'm going to do 30 minutes of each. It's amazing how much I can be done in 30 minutes if I'm not checking email every 20 minutes. But if I check it a couple times a day, man, I can get a lot done.
And that's interesting.
I try to commit to emptying my inbox before I go to sleep every night. Zero. And for a lot of people, they hear that, and they're like, you're on crack. You can't do that. I think it's because most people get paralyzed by not knowing what to do with their emails. And if you don't know what to do with them, dude, I say defer it, delete it, do it in that particular moment if you can, 2 minutes or less, or maybe delegate it. But it needs to get out of your inbox and into an action list. Once it's in an action list, you can be at peace that you know it'll get done when it needs to get done.
And that's tough to do. It's really tough because I know I'm guilty of it where I'm much better at it now, but whew, it's still a struggle to where I look at my inbox
at
the end of the day.
What is tough? When you say that's tough, what is tough in particular?
To go to bed at the end of the day and not have anything in my inbox. Like Carrie and like yourself, I too, you know, find myself, I'll do a count at the end of the day, like how many emails did go out, you know, and oh my gosh, it'd be 75, 80, 100, 110. And to think that that is all happening during the course of a day as well, just blows me away. And I love how you mentioned at the beginning about the interruptions, you know, because our days are so dramatically interrupted, and especially now with social
media. Your day is interrupted. You don't have to be interrupted.
Excuse me. Yes, my day.
I really mean it. Like,
no, totally.
If you wanted to, you could turn your phone off and your computer off, and you won't get interrupted at all.
Gosh,
and the emails will build up, and if you decide to turn it all back on again at 10 a.m. and give yourself 45 minutes to do emails and then turn the computer back off, that's totally reasonable. And you can get a lot accomplished by making that one decision. Now, it feels scary because if people are like me, we're addicted to wanting to be in the know or to not wanting to miss out or to whatever. But it's amazing how effective and how inefficient it is to be attending to these things incessantly, as opposed to doing it focused and really going after emails when we need to.
It's true. I'll have to give that a shot. I have to try it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be worth it. I think it's at least worth like a try. And see what people's experiences with it.
Do one day and see how it goes. And then cry the next.
Well, like here's a way to get dissatisfied with that idea. If you want to, you can just say, look, at the end of the day, if I don't want to empty my inbox, I'm just going to select everything that's left and delete it.
Ouch. Carrie, what do you think?
Well, I empty my inbox every night, so...
Shut up.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
I mean, I try and keep, you know, my unreads down to zero. It's a personal peeve with me to have things sitting there unread or not dealt with in some way. That typically isn't my problem. The problem that I usually run into, notice I'm saying I have a tendency to not prioritize
things. Way to model leadership, man. Way to go.
Yeah, I'm bad at prioritizing things correctly. And I'll tend to lump everything into critical buckets instead of saying, okay, this is truly critical and this can wait till tomorrow. And so I end up with days where I just feel overwhelmed because I have so many things in my critical pile that just don't have to be there.
Well, what's your criteria for something being critical?
That's the problem. Is it came in and I need to deal with it, and someone's expecting a response on in a fast turnaround that there may be it it could be a deal breaker if I don't get back to someone on a certain period of time, or I'm really anal about responding to emails as soon as they come in. And so something comes in and I need to do it. Yeah, I know. And it's one of my things. Hey, we're not, I'm not perfect. I admit that. And so all these emails are coming in all day long. And I keep going, okay, I got to fix it. And it just ends up not working out for me.
Yeah, that's right. So if the system's busted, trade it in. And I wonder if a better solution might be to really commit to just for a certain period of time that you will let emails come in, and then twice a day you'll empty your inbox, but you won't reply at once. Because one of the tensions, at least in my experience, I don't know if you relate to this or not, but when I'm tempted, because I'm the same way, I'm tempted to reply over and over again, what I'm actually doing is I'm speeding up the machine, and I'm perpetuating more emails coming into my inbox. And if I'm overwhelmed, I'll just reply with answers that actually don't help get resolution on the dialogue back and forth. I'm just putting it off in the hopes that they have to respond back, like I'm playing tennis or something with emails, as opposed to actually dealing with it and getting it done. And
right. And I always tend to find that I'll respond, as quickly as humanly possible to an email, and then I start getting frustrated because people don't do the same back, because they're not expecting me to answer that fast, and they're not ready to deal with my response. And so why should I?
They might be ready, but they might be more committed to productivity than you are.
Right.
They're not responding because they've decided that they understand it makes more sense to bat through emails at the end of the day than it does to respond to your email right away. I know when I was a college professor, I was really tempted to reply to emails to students right away, but I didn't realize until later that I was actually training my students. By when I was responding right away, they grew to expect me to respond immediately.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
And that's a problem, because that means then they have a reasonable expectation to get mad at me if I don't reply right away. Now all of a sudden I'm a slave to these students. Now contrast that with what David Jay does, and I'm giving him a bad rap here, but he's kind of famous for this. He doesn't reply to emails. He reads every one of them, and he doesn't reply to them all. And as a result, everyone kind of forgives him for it. They just go, okay, well, DJ doesn't reply to emails. If I don't get an email, I'm not hurt or offended. It's not personal. He doesn't feel the need to be ruled by an email. And I think that's really smart. It's really productive. And it's one of the reasons why he's freed up to play at a different level than most people get to play at.
You know,
Don't
that's
answer the phone. Freedom, freedom.
I really, yeah, that's, I'm really struck. Yes, struck. I don't know, it's long day. But I'm really hit by what you said about being a slave to other people's expectations, because it is up to us to set those particular boundaries. And I had
That's right,
thought of that
exactly.
in passing the other day. I was like, well, it's my fault that the people are getting upset if I don't respond to their email within like 24 hours. It's like, well, because I want to respond that much faster than everybody else would normally expect I would, in my head, is, I guess that's where I'm going with it. So I can totally relate
Yeah.
with like what Carrie is saying. And for you to point that out, it's like, we really should take a little bit of a different stance. It's like, okay, we get 100 emails a day. Let's deal with them every other day or something like that, and set up some type of a schedule to where the expectations aren't completely outrageous.
Yeah, if you slow the pacing down, things
Yeah.
will slow down. That's
Yeah.
what I discovered, at least for me, is there's a I actually get I get kind of I get I kind of get off on the chaos. Like it actually feels kind of good, like I'm wanted or something, when I can perpetuate a bunch of emails every day. In
Yeah.
fact, I used to say with some pride, like when I hit triple digits a day of emails, I was kind of proud of myself. Like I could say it. But I would say it was like, oh, poor me, I get 100 emails a day. But if I didn't get 100 emails in a day, I was kind of like, well, is email broken? Or do people not like me? Or something? And that was so whacked. Like, email is supposed to be a tool that I use. I'm supposed to be the master. It's supposed to be the slave. But most people who use email that I encounter, at least in my experience on bad days for me, I am the slave to my email. And that's problematic. It's totally problematic.
And you know what? There are probably a ton of people out there, my guess, that are very similar, because I know that I'm guilty of it. And the same thought. And Carrie, I'm kind of gleaning from what you're saying that it's much the same as well, to where you have your own expectations, and I'm kind of getting that, you want to set that like that.
If you could wave a magic wand and be hyper efficient with the way that you're producing, you say you want to produce, that you'd have less financial worries. Is that fair?
Amen.
Okay.
So if that's true, and somebody tells you that, and really with kind of a decent amount of a proven track record, can point to, you know what, the way that you're doing your client relations, or the way that you're doing your email is really inefficient, and you say you want to get a different result, but you're not willing to throw out the broken system, then maybe you're not as committed to getting a different result than you think you are.
Insanity.
Yeah, exactly. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And that's insanity. And we all do it. I mean, I get it. I'm in the same boat, do it all the time. But when I wake up to it and I get off automatic, well, then I have new possibilities. Like, trade it in. Get a different life. It's amazing what is available that I'm too easily pleased with my little life, and I want a bigger life. Well, if I want a bigger life, I have to get uncomfortable, and I have to be willing to trade in these systems that are broke.
So I think a lot of our listeners that are, taking this all in right now, I think we should, this would be a good topic to bring up on the forums. How can everybody involved, myself included, how can we make our own lives uncomfortable to fix the things that we're repeatedly doing wrong, like time management, task management, and other arenas, and fix those and employ other tools? And I've been off the grid a lot since the roadshow program in San Diego, and I'm okay with it right now because there's so much good stuff happening right now. Like free
Right
time,
on.
I can breathe.
Right.
It,
Yeah. Well, like
oh.
I think that's the rub for me in these categories, is the bigger picture game stuff. Like I was trading in me being present with my children so I could answer somebody's email who I didn't really care about. But yet I felt like the email gods were gonna, shun me or something if I didn't do it.
They won't.
And what's that? They won't, that's right. They don't exist, actually, apparently. In fact, you can just say, "I'm sorry, I didn't get the email," and people will forgive you. It's amazing. But what's amazing to me is how much power I give to these things. And it's not required. And then ultimately, somebody's going to lose. And when I make those kinds of choices, the people who lose are my kids. And when I'm awake to that reality, all of this is a really easy decision. But I have a lot of friends, and I know you guys do too, who have lost loved ones, or their spouses have left them, or whatever. And they think they left them because of certain reasons, but it probably was a whole bunch, like big reasons, but it was probably a whole bunch of little reasons. Like email was more important than being present. And I know I run the risk of these things, you guys. This is like core to what's going on for me. And it's one of the reasons why I'm pretty awake to these things, the ideas right now, and why I'm becoming increasingly committed to. I'd rather piss off some people about emails and make sure that my kids know that I love them than be a slave to emails so I can say that I'm productive. That's just nuts.
And well, we love you, Dane.
What's that?
We love you.
Yeah, but I want my kids to love me more than I want you to. So I might not answer your email.
Nice.
So you know, and the irony in all of this, by the way, is that according to Alan, it's right, it's actually more effective to not answer my emails the way that I'm doing them. And then I could do it in a way that's actually way more effective and free up my time to be with my kids. That's a win to me.
And, you know, I'm sure that, like, Carrie, you've got other things, you know, you'd like to be doing, you know, along with spending time with your family. I know that Catherine would love to see my face a lot more, you know, outside of my office. And, you know, that would be really cool. I mean, that, you know, this is something that I firmly believe everybody struggles with. So let's talk about some of the tools. You know, we've kind of touched base on the tools that are available. Carrie, you're very familiar with the Microsoft products, and I know there's a huge following out there. What would you suggest in terms of what works for you in terms of your scheduling with Outlook and the office tools that are available for Microsoft?
Well, again, the book that goes along with this is called Total Workday Control, and it's based on getting things done, and it's by Michael Linenberger. I'll put all this in the show notes, and if you go to his website, you can actually download this little tool for, it's called, I can't remember what the tool's called, but it installs into Outlook, and it sets up all of your tasks and to-do lists based on priorities and all this, and then all you have to do is put stuff in there, and it automatically takes care of it all for you. It's gorgeous the way it works, and it helps you to keep track of those critical items, the things that aren't so critical, and then the ones that are outside of the horizon. And for me, that's been working really, really well. And when I get up in the morning and I see, you know, here's five things that have to be done today versus seeing 80 tasks that I've created for myself, it's far less manageable, and I don't feel stressed out. I'm like, oh, I can accomplish those things and get them done and then deal with the stuff that's coming in throughout the day versus, oh my God, I have 100 things. Where do I start? And so this has been a good tool for me to use because my day-to-day stuff is on the Windows platform using Outlook.
You know, a series of tools that I have been collecting and using for a long time. I actually made a little website that listeners might take advantage of, and it's not just within the context of getting things done, although that's part of it. But if you go to blog.danesanders.com/killer-apps.
Oh, yeah.
Or if you just go to my blog and then search for killer apps in the search function, you'll see it. But it's a page that I'm updating regularly, and they're all productivity tools. For people who come to my workshop, one of the things that I spend a lot of time on, like hours and hours on, is developing what I call modular microsystems, basically productivity-efficient programs or systems that work for photographers in particular. And as I'm picking up tools that really save dramatic amounts of time, I put the links to all those things in this little on this page. One of my favorite ones that's on there that is a time saver that isn't directly connected to the Getting Things Done system, but is saving me thousands of keystrokes and many, many hours of my life, is this thing called Text Expander. text expander. And the link, again, is on that killer apps page. But this application is amazing. It's kind of like creating signatures. If you use a mail program that you might have a bunch of signatures for sending the same kind of message over and over again, that you're not limited just to mail. You can actually have snippets of information that have, you know, code in it or links in it. It can be dynamic. It can be plain text. But what's cool about it is you can, with a couple keystrokes, import that exact phraseology or, you know, links or letters or whatever you want to do into any application. And it's amazing. One of the things, my favorite things in it is it keeps track of how many keystrokes you're saving and how many hours that adds up to if you type 85 words a minute without errors. And I think right now mine's up to, like, since I got it just a couple months ago, I've over like 5 hours of my life. And when I think just from typing, and when I think about that, like just a couple keystrokes really makes that big of a difference. When I get to the end of my life and I look back and I go, man, I saved an extra month of my life that I could have been typing keystrokes, I'm not going to be regretful that I took on that tool. And that's the advantage of these kinds of productivity things. If you really embrace this kind of idea, not only is it great for your bottom line, but it's really great for your life. So I try to capture all those things and put those tools in one place, and that's a good place to go. blog.daneseniors.com/killer-apps.
Now, I remember seeing that page shortly after the roadshow when you had announced it.
Yeah, when I first did it, it was pretty rough. But
yeah.
Since then, it's been refined, and it's pretty tight. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff in there, from little tiny little applications like Text Expander to more robust things, bigger solutions for post-production and website development. And even it's even like for those of you who have a new show at site, I just put up there, if you're having trouble getting to understand Show It, there's this really cool thing that my friend Nick Haskins wrote. He's with this company called Spilled Milk, and he wrote an unofficial user's guide to Show It sites. And it's so helpful. It's like 31 pages, it costs $30, and it'll save you like hours of your life. And you should go get it. And the link is right there. You know, I don't get a kickback for that link or anything, but it's worth going for. There are some links on there that I do actually get an affiliate benefit from being on, you know, from you guys clicking through, which I think is totally fine, because if it's helpful, then go for it. But I don't endorse anything on there that I don't personally use or that I think will ultimately I could stand behind personally. So I would encourage you guys to check out that set of links. One thing that if you're a Mac user and you're trying to decide between things like Things or Omni, just know that you can't really screw that decision up. Just go for one, try it on for size. If it fits like a good pair of jeans, go for it. If not, try the other one. But the modest cost that you have to spend to kind of get in those software packages compared to the time you're going to save in your life, it's an absolute no-brainer. If the system makes sense, you should go for it.
I couldn't echo that anymore. I mean, big time. That's as quickly as I picked up on the Things, and it was just the one bit that held me back, and moving over to Omni, just wow. To look at my week, to look at my month, and with the new text program that you were mentioning, where I had seen that in action, and I was impressed. And as you were saying, you've saved 5 hours of your life. Hello? That's like going to the movies with the family or something. You know,
what if you're Michael Jackson right now, and you're like, you got an option. You can die of a cardiac arrest right now, or I'll give you 5 hours of life.
Yeah.
Or you can trade those in and type monotonous emails that you've written 1,000 times already, over and over and over again. Like, this is their life. I don't think anyone's going to complain about some sort of $20 app or whatever it is later in life when you realize what this stuff is saving you.
And not only that, but these tools, because they help us become much more efficient and saving time, will help us, or I don't want to say help us, excuse me. These tools are helping me save more time. They're going to provide me more of an opportunity to be able to go out and network, to be able to network with other photographers, with properties, to generate more business and take the business to the next level. Because as you've seen, and as Carrie and Catherine have seen, anybody that knows me knows I've hit maximum capacity. It's like, that's it. I need to break through that ceiling. And it was just a matter of needing to make a lot of things different and get uncomfortable. And it's been tough. The past couple of weeks have been just, but I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it. I'm feeling it. I'm experiencing it. It's making a difference. And to know that later on down the road, my business is going to be able to go to that next level. And that's, who isn't wanting to do that with their business? I mean, we're all in it to make money and have fun. Duh. Except Carrie. Carrie doesn't want to make any money or have fun. He just wants to just, you know.
Yeah.
I think Carrie's a recovering grumpy. It's all right. No problem. We love you as you are, man. No problem.
Yeah, I was a little grumpy a few minutes ago.
But we still love you, man.
We all have our moments.
Sure that happened. Yeah, I'm with you, man. I sure do. I sure do.
Oh. Wow, this is been
cool, you guys. I'm almost in destination, so I probably need to hit it. But I can't thank you guys enough for what you guys are doing with Camera Dojo. It's a big deal. And for you guys to have passed the year mark and to have consistently delivered tools to lead and help people along the way, I know I'm speaking as one face in a huge crowd, but thank you for what you guys are doing. It's for our industry, and I just applaud it and hope that you're able to continue to find efficiencies in your guys' careers so you can provide these kinds of opportunities for other folks, especially those who are starting out and want to start on the right foot. So bless you guys for all that you're doing.
Well, thank you, Dane. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much. Wow.
And
very cool.
If I didn't overstay my welcome, have me back again sometime. I love what you guys are up to.
But thank you, Dane. I think this is really helpful. I mean, this is certainly a topic that a lot of people really need to consider in their day-to-day life and how they go about being more productive and more efficient. And you know, like I said, we'll collect all the links that we talked about and the different books that we talked about, and we'll get them all in the show notes so that you guys can find them and try and find out something that works for you, whether you be on Windows or that inferior platform. What is it? Oh yeah, the Mac. Yeah. And we'll see how that goes. And but we want feedback from you. If you are having a good experience with it, you know, let us know. Post in the forums and let everyone else know what's working for you and maybe some tips on how to use some different software packages so that we can all learn and benefit from that. So I think that was excellent.
Can I say one more thing about that?
Jump in, Dane.
Just as an encouragement for folks who maybe haven't, who have been more benefited from what Camera Dojo is doing and resources like it. It is so tough to create these vehicles for people to learn and grow from. And it's a pretty unsung job. I've been doing this stuff for a long time myself, and I think it's hard for people to really appreciate how much of a sacrifice these two guys have put on the line for the sake of our industry. And if you could do one thing for them to support them, please, whenever, especially when there's a subject that's really helpful for you or really hits home, don't just perceive it like a consumer. Be someone who's contributing. And even if that's just jumping on the blog and making a comment, that's great. But even go further. Like, how can you help get the word out so that more people will benefit from this incredible resource? Like, Twitter about it, Facebook about it. Get specific in your Twitter. Don't just endorse it in a blind way, but say something in a way that's going to invite people, other people to come and check it out. You do that, guys, that's going to be a massive encouragement for these two, and you're going to get way, way better content. They're going to be discouraged, and it's going to be a bummer. So please do these kinds of favor, and not just the YouTube, any place where you're getting value as you're building your business, don't forget to say thanks by spreading the love and spreading the word of mouth.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Wow. I'm borderline speechless.
Okay, so the question is, Dane.
I'm grateful, man. I'm grateful for all you guys do.
So the question is, how much more time do you have?
Well, I don't know.
All right.
I have a couple more minutes.
If you've been listening to the shows lately, we kind of have this thing that we make our guests do now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You have to give us an opening. You have to give us an opening.
an opening?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
That we play
Wait,
at the
what do you
beginning
mean?
of the show. You're listening to Camera Dojo with Cary Garrison and David Esquire, that type of a thing, you know?
Okay.
But it no, it starts off, hi, this is Dean Sanders with whatever, Fast Track Photographer, whatever you want to include. And you're listening to Cary Garrison and the world famous David Esquire at the most extraordinarily, incredibly awesome podcast in the world, Camera Dojo.
So you can feel free to ad lib a little bit. But we always save it to the end to surprise people so you have no time to think about it. So you see how that works?
All right, let me do it real quick. Let me do it real quick. Let me listen up a couple times. Can I do that?
No one has done it in less than 7 takes.
And that was Sarah.
Sarah Fan?
Yes.
Oh, I got to beat her. I got to. She's very competitive. I got to beat her. Just a second. Okay, I'm ready.
Go for it.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to Camera Dojo, the world-famous Camera Dojo, the one that makes a difference, the one that takes it to a whole different level. I'm not talking about the one that, you know, everyone listens to. I'm talking to the one, oh, I blew it. Darn it, I was going in a good place. Darn it, I'm so mad, I thought I was going to get it.
Hey, I sat back, I put my feet up on my desk, I'm like, hey, this is going to go for a while. Take two. Oh,
okay, let me go again. Everybody, I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to the world famous Camera Dojo with David Esquire and Cary Garrison, and you are lucky to do so. I think you're great. Crap. Okay, one more time. One more time. This last one. Guaranteed last one. Hey, everybody, I'm Mike Colon, and I want to thank you for listening to Camera Dojo. That was kind of funny, don't you think?
Oh, man.
Okay, wait. Okay, I'm ready. Hey, everybody, I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to Camera Dojo with Cary Garrison and David Esquire.
Okay.
Done.
All right.
That works. That works.
Nice, clean.
Yeah.
Right on.
I mean, you need at least one.
Gene Higgett did say, the best looking photographer, wedding photographers in the industry. So, we'll go with that. It's all right. It's all right, Dan.
I just want to make sure I made it under the 7. So this is a bonus. What I'm going to give you right now. Ready?
Okay. Okay. Here we go. Here we go.
I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to Cary Garrison and David Esquire on the world-famous Camera Dojo.
Okay.
That was cool. That was cool.
That's right a on. Keeper. That's All a keeper.
Right. Yeah, that was way cool.
I was trying to give you a little, kind of like a K-Rock, like one of them.
I totally picked up on that right off.
That was actually for you in particular, David. So.
Aww, I feel so special.
You have a special spot in my heart, so Aww. I had to throw that out. I tried to do it with an English accent, but I thought that would be too much.
No, leave that for me.
Mind the gap. Mind the gap. That's it.
That's right. Mind the gap. Dude, and Dane, thank you for coming on. And, you know, everything that you have said this evening about what we're doing here, you know, you're doing much the same thing in the industry with Ask Dane and the coaching and the Fast Track Photographer Roadshow. I mean, the list that you've got right now is like a laundry list. Camera Dojo pales in comparison to what you're doing. So it's really impressive, and it's just so neat to see the type of mentality that you're helping people discover that they can be not only as themselves, but as a community as well. Because where we're at today as photographers, so dichotomous of where it was 10 years ago, 15, and especially even further back in 20 and 25 years ago. There's no way. You know, people were like, you want me to tell you what? Are you crazy? And then here it is. We're a community of photographers sharing knowledge and helping each other. And it's just so cool. It's really a neat experience to be able to live in this time, to be able to do business in this time as well. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's a privilege to be a part of this industry. So
it's
well, cool, you guys. Thanks for having me on. I'll look forward to seeing you guys next time.
All right, yeah. Dane.
For number 3.
Number three.
Awesome. You have a great weekend, Dane.
All right. You guys too. Talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
You still there? Yeah.
Yeah. That went well.
Yeah.
I think that that's really going to open some people's minds. I have a feeling there's going to be some good comments on this. I got the same kind of vibe on this like we did with Roberto and with several others, where it's like, we're going to touch on a subject here that people are going to be like, what? Because serious, dude. I mean, yeah, it's a real pain in the ass right now. I am moving everything off of things and to Omni. But I'm telling you, man, shit. At the end of the day, for me to look at my calendar, and granted, I'm still, it's painful right now. I'm struggling, working it out. But wow. I have not yet felt like this. And to look at my calendar and go, that's my calendar of events. Things that, not things, but events, opportunities, weddings, shoots, whatever, appointments. My task list, something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
The only thing that's on my calendar is when I say, I'll see you at 2:00. I'll call you back at 5. And then that goes on the calendar because it's something that I need to do at a specific time.
Yeah, like for my calendar tomorrow, I've got a couple wake-up alarms to make sure I get up. Be sure to leave on time for the wedding, the block of time for the wedding itself. There was a red carpet reception I was thinking about going to tomorrow night, but probably ain't going to happen because I just want to focus here. But I had that on there, like be sure to leave the reception on time. Get ready for the event in West Hollywood. Leave for the event and then the event information. You know, that's, my calendars never look like this, you know, to where it's just events. I love this. And, you know, that was funny. You're like, yeah, for somebody that was trying to use a shoehorn, like, yeah, hello. So totally me. I mean, I had the right idea, just didn't have the right tools. I knew what I wanted, if that makes any sense. You know, it's like, I know what I wanted, but I can't do it because I don't have the tools. And now I'm like, ah.
And that's why, I mean, you'd sit there and you go, oh, I have too much to do. It's like, no, you, when you really look at it, you probably don't on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
You know, and so, but you have a tendency to get overwhelmed because you're looking at 100 things.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can never get to them. Of course you can never get to them. No shit, you can't get to them.
Nobody can do it. It's humanly impossible.
You know, but, in, you know, and, you know, this is, I mean, I struggled with this for a while, you know, and I kind of regress into it once in a while, and it's, you just go, but I have to. I have to get these things done. Well, then schedule time for them.
Yep.
You know, and if they absolutely have to get done, then they go on the calendar, and you say, I have to block out this section of time for this thing so I can actually get it done.
Yep.
You know, and if that doesn't, you know, and if it's not that critical that you have to put some time to it, well, then it doesn't belong there, and you get to it in order. And you just deal with it, and you can't, and that's why I do like calling it, you know, the way we normally work. I like calling it a guilt based system, because that really applies to you.
Nice, thanks.
Don't you agree?
No, I totally did.
You would feel guilty if you weren't getting to something.
Well, I feel like that with my emails, but it's so.
But
wow.
it's you can't just say get over it. You know, you have to.
I'm not saying get over it.
No. I can't just tell you just get over it. Don't
no,
feel
you
guilty
can't.
About it. What you have to do is you have to have a system that allows you to do things without feeling guilty about them.
Yeah, and to have a system that works.
You know, and that's why it's not that I don't have a million tasks sitting here, and yet. You know, I take time to do a video, or I, you know, I'm taking time to do something else. Yeah, I'm taking that time to do those things because I'm not going to feel guilty about something else that I didn't get done today, because right. It just, you know, it's not hypercritical.
Right.
The hypercritical stuff gets done. After the hypercritical stuff gets done, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to do one of my other things that I want to do. And get it done. And if I get one or two of those things done, then I go back to my second tier list and go, okay, now I need to get some more important things done.
Yeah.
You know, and I get those done. I'm like, okay, I reward myself by going, okay, I'm going to go get one of my fun things done.
I know that was a lot of information to try and suck down in a short period of time.
But I think everyone hopefully got something out of that. I mean, I don't know of too many people who are so nailed down in their task workflow that they can't use any help whatsoever.
He completely makes me not feel stupid, but, you know, sitting down and listening to him, it's, I would have to say it's like inspiring and kind of like, oh, why didn't I think of that?
Well, I think many people are naive.
Yeah. And that's okay.
How to manage tasks appropriately. And what we learned growing up in how to deal with tasks and to-do lists doesn't work in the environment where we are bombarded every minute, literally every minute, with new things. When you have a Twitter client up and you've got Facebook and you have email and you have your phone and all these things, you can literally, and I know it happens to me, if I sit there and watch the incoming flow of communication, it is literally every minute there is something new coming up, and you cannot deal with that and try and be effective at the same time.
No. And I really like the word that Dane was using. He said interruptions, because in a sense, that really is what's going on with all of the communication that is at our fingertips currently. And it's tough because us as artists, well, I don't want to say us, me as an artist, see, owning it, bringing it back.
That's
it's not
right.
Everybody else. It's me, myself as an artist. I tend to want to deliver and meet everybody else's demands and everybody else's inquiries as quickly and as fast and just as rapidly as possible, because that's kind of how I would want my, you know, inquiries and demands and requests, et cetera, handled from other people. And that can really put a huge hindrance on my workflow. And since I've employed some of the tools that we talked about on the program or on the conversation, it's really helped me out a great deal, and it forces me to stay focused towards like, okay, you know what? That's all great and that's all fun and fine and dandy, but I need to do this now. This is my objective. This is what it's all about. It's about running the business and making sure that everything is getting handled. And it's been awesome. And, you know, I think the naivety and the ignorance, it's okay, because for myself, I had no clue that there were task management softwares that, you know, software that was out there other than what I'd been used to over the years, which was Outlook, and then moving over to Mac using my calendar, and like you said, using a shoehorn to squeeze everything in.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
No, I mean, like, you know how you pointed out back in the day when things were different and we didn't have all of this communication going on, a lot easier and a lot more manageable with a simple calendar program or pen and paper.
For me, and I know for a lot of us, tools like Twitter have even become a replacement for instant messaging. And
yes.
So, but the problem is, while you're trying to use it for that, you're constantly bombarded by all the other noise that's coming across from every single person. And I went through and I whittled down the people that I follow from, I don't know, 800 down to like 45. Because I can't follow everybody. I simply can't follow everybody. It's just, I can't. I cannot have conversations with 500 people. And so I had to dramatically cut mine down so that even if it's running, I'm not getting interrupted every 30 seconds. And it was actually about every 20 seconds. Bing, bing, bing. I couldn't deal with it. So my choice is, do I shut it off or do I weed it down to where if someone is actually trying to get a hold of me that I want to have a conversation with, then it becomes a useful tool. So Twitter had kind of morphed into something more than a useful tool, and then its usefulness had degraded to the point of almost being unusable completely. And now I'm reeling it back in so that it's an effective tool again. But even still, I won't be running it all day long. I have it set up. If someone sends me a direct message, I get an email. So if I get an email, boom, I can go respond to that person. I don't need to have the constant bombardment. I've even not been keeping my email running 24/7. I will turn it off and I will go in, and I'm not to the point where I can only check it twice a day. I'm not gonna go there. But,
that was trippy when he said that. Like, what?
But I'm probably down to once an hour, you know, and I'll finish whatever task I'm working on, and in between significant tasks, time for me to take a break, get a glass of water, check my email, close it, move on to my next task. Instead of task, email, and getting constantly interrupted, I put the email away and I deal with it after my next task is completed. And that's helping me significantly because I know when I send someone an email, it is rare, and I mean rare, that I get a response within seconds.
Yeah.
So why should I? I mean, I know I want to, and I'm OCD enough to like start getting the shakes if I don't respond to emails right away. But I'm trying to overcome that and say, you know what? I'm just going to put it into my daily workflow. Significant task, check my email. Significant task, check my email. And I'm getting far more accomplished.
It's not easy. It really isn't easy. I'm struggling with it as well. But the program that I've started employing, which is helping me stay on track, OmniFocus, I'm loving it. In fact, I had a conversation with the company earlier today because I had some questions because I'm still in the trial period of using the software before I lay down the additional money for it. And it's not expensive. I think it was like $60 or something. But before I do that, I want to make sure I'm satisfied with it. And it's really, I love it. Like, I can look at my calendar for tomorrow and go, okay, I've got these things that need to be taken care of. And then when these things, you know, as I'm achieving those tasks, I can be checking my email, Twitter as well, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on from there. And I really liked how Dane had pointed out that these tools are supposed to be our slaves. It's not supposed to be the other way around. That is so profound if you really think about it, because how many people do you see walking around where they barely look up from their cell phone, their iPhones or their Blackberries? They're just tethered to those items all the time. We've got to learn how to detach, because if we don't, what are we going to do? I don't know. I mean, I couldn't imagine what people would become like. I don't even want to become that kind of person where they're just walking around, just blah, 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 just texting and getting carpal tunnel and the thumbs.
You mean you want to get away from being that person?
Oh, whatever. I know I'm a little bit of a junkie, but not nearly as bad as I used to be.
No, you're severe.
Yeah, whatever.
Dude, David, seriously, all your friends almost got together to have an intervention. We're going to send you to Twitter rehab.
Twitter rehab.
I know it was going to be painful, and the withdrawals are really painful to deal with, but for your own good.
Wow.
You almost had a Twitter intervention.
That's like the falling down video from Duran Duran, sending the model to a model, you know, rehab center. Yeah, nice. That's great, dude. Appreciate that. Yeah.
It's because we care.
Yeah. Anyhow, so yeah, I think this has been a great conversation, Carrie. I mean, let's go ahead and wrap it up. We had about, 50, 55 minutes?
Oh, something like that.
Game today.
Love to hear about any software tools online, standalone, Mac, PC. If you have any tools that you are using, please put it in the show notes. People are always looking for other tools. I'm always looking for better tools. I'm using some stuff that's going to be in the show notes, but I'd really appreciate to hear from other people as to what they're using and how they're putting them to use, especially things that can be, you know, done in a shared environment or things like that, or in a collaborative way. Those would be fantastic. So we really want to hear from people as to what they're using to get the most out of these types of things. So, well, I'm at least happy to announce that I've got a couple unique Facebook names, so it's a little easier to find me and Camera Dojo on Facebook now. You can find me at facebook.com/Carrie Garrison, twitter.com/Carrie Garrison, or Camera Dojo at facebook.com/Camera Dojo. And you can always follow the show and other photography-related stuff on Twitter at twitter.com/Camera Dojo. And David?
Yeah, I'm just not as special as you, I guess. I haven't hit that point yet on Facebook. I'm asking, but
everybody become a fan of David's Facebook page.
Please. I've only got a few more. I mean, well, I don't want to say a few, but I need 49. I need 50 more to have 101. I'm at 51 fans on the Esquire Photography fan page. And I even posted today, I was out golfing with a client, and I posted today a picture, and it was orange, like the Camera Dojo orange, and it happened to say Mojo on it for the Dojo Mojo. Had to take a picture with my iPhone this morning. Anyhow, so that was fun. But you can find me other than on Facebook, which is facebook.com/David Esquire. And then you can also find me on facebook.com/ a whole bunch of information that should be replaced with Esquire Photography eventually. And then you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Esquire Photo. And then, of course, www.esquirephotography.com. Carrie, I guess that's pretty much it, man. Should we wrap it up?
So. All right, cool. Folks. We will catch you next week.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to Camera Dojo, the world-famous Camera Dojo, the one that makes a difference, the one that takes it to a whole different level. I'm not talking about the one that, you know, everyone listens to. I'm talking to the one, oh, I blew it. Darn it. I was going in a good place. Darn it. I was so mad. I thought I was going to get it in one take.
Hey, I sat back. I put my feet up on my desk. I'm like, hey, this is going to go for a while. Take two. Oh,
okay, let me go again. Everybody, I'm Dane Sanders, and you are listening to the world-famous Camera Dojo with David Esquire and Carrie Garrison, and you are lucky to do so. I think you're great.